Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host,
Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Excited to be back. This is a familiar topic, and it is one that we are excited to talk about, specifically in Modern. This is a big one for me, Alex.
Yeah, so we have a special guest today. Before we get into what that topic is, it's Mel. We have Charlotte Sable from the Commander Advisory Group, at JQuillGirl on Twitter.
Jackal?
Cheers.
Yeah. JQL, Jackal.
Yeah. Oh, Jackal. It's meant to be Jackal. Got it. Cool. I should not be relied to read words out loud. No. Jackal, girl, welcome. Charlotte, how are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Always a pleasure. I haven't played a lot of Modern lately, but then, you know, hey, the deck's better now, and we'll get into that. But yeah, no, much happy to be here. I'm a big fan of y'all's, so... So good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that about playing Modern. I think many of the media projects that I think a lot of us were involved in, media projects, but I mean, that just goes beyond even just playing Modern, have just changed, right? The face has just changed during COVID. Like I did this Action Movie Anatomy show for years. I haven't done an episode of that in 7 months, right? That show's pretty much done, it seems like. And, you know, we talked exclusively in person together about the Modern format every week and went to GPs. Well, there aren't GPs right now, and there's not a lot of paper Modern being played, if any. So everything kind of adapts and adjusts, and here we are talking about new stuff, doing a new thing.
Yep. And something cool has happened. It's fascinating that the moment during M21's announcement that they had keyworded mill, which for those who don't know is the mechanic of putting cards from the top of your library into your graveyard, either your opponent's or your own, they keyworded it. So for a while, it was just they spelled that out, put X cards from the top of X library into X graveyard. And now it's mill five, and then you mill put five cards. Target player mills five. And the moment that happens, also, we go back to Zendikar and we get a special secondary crab friend. But mill is now kind of a major mechanic, both in standard as part of the Rogues Tribe kind of kit and deck, which is now currently one of the best decks in the format. Ben just made Mythic playing a Rogues deck in Historic. Modern, it's currently around 2.5% of the metagame, which is... a big deal for mill
from people actually that in the metagame.
tried making that happen for a long time. And then obviously in all of the places, mill in the casual format and kitchen tables and commander and everywhere else, it's always been somewhat of a thing. And so we wanted to kind of, you reached out wanting to talk about mill cause you have a cool deck, and Ben, honestly, I have to work more to get him not to talk about it. So we figured it'd be a cool thing to jump into. One of the things that before we get kind of into specific deck lists and everything, I did want to talk about kind of like the concept of why they keyworded it. And obviously they've been trying to for a long time. I can like probably find 10 different Maro articles and or Blogatog posts talking about like, what are your ideas for what we should call this mechanic? Because we can't figure it out. And like, kind of it feels like with like four color Omnath and other things, like Wizards' decision to start being a little bit more open to what the community wants. That feels like it has now coincided with mill being keyword. This has been kind of the slang for the card since millstone in a set that is older than me.
I mean, Alpha. Millstone's an OG card. Those that don't remember Millstone, it's an artifact.
I think Millstone was Antiquities, wasn't it?
Oh, is it? No, I thought it was.
I think so.
You might be right. It's a very, very early set.
I think it was Antiquities. But we'll double check. Original was Antiquities. So.
And so it was an artifact for two colorless that I believe taps for, what is it, one in a colorless? Or
two, like, tap. Two tap, mill two. Yeah,
mill two. And so that's where it all starts. And after, over the years, you've got Millstone, Whetstone, Wet Wheel, and all these various sort of
grindstone
additions to the concept that mill. But it is funny that all these years later, I sort of think it's fitting, because when you go back to that history, those first like six or seven or eight sets, it's always nice to get stuff from those sets. So the fact that it was Millstone and we would call it mill makes sense. But why were they so resistant?
I don't know. I mean, because mill doesn't flavorfully connect with the mechanic, I guess.
Yeah, I think they've classically been like, it's the same reason that like for a long time they're just like, we're never going to Kamigawa. We know all you want it, but it's not going to happen. We're not going to do this thing. Like we wouldn't lean into tropes, like the fact that Omnath, like I believe Ashaya, the green all creatures are lands card, was originally the Omnath of the set. And then like development was like, no, we lean into memes now. And the meme for Omnath is that it adds a color every set. So it should be four colors, not one color. And so then they made new Omnath and that broke every format. Not every format, broke standard. And so I think it's partially just like and it's the same reason they like didn't put squirrels in any set ever, right? Like they were against all of these like cutesy meme parts of Magic because I think they like overcorrected from the early days where they would just put their names. Like Morrow is a little Magic card and like other people's names are in the set and they like kind of went all the way to the other side. So I think that's the reason. That being said, I think also just like they're always like the lexicon and like you could, I think people have like tried arguing like milling is a monotonous task where you're just doing the same thing over and over again, slowly grinding things. That kind of is what mill could be argued as doing. But I think it's also just like, we're fighting an uphill battle. The community hasn't come up with something. There's nothing better than this. And the community is going to be resistant to anything we come up with. So let's just, same reason, like, people still call Commander EDH.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's always going to happen. So.
Right. And then soon after, we got the sequel, The Worst Hedron Crab, Ruin Crab. How? Why? Why can't it target me? Makes me sad every day. But
like, sure, it can't target yourself, but it's also way better for Commander because it's each opponent now.
Sure.
Also, it doesn't target, so that gets around some of the problems that Mill had in Modern, which we can get to later. But like, one of the ways that people fight or used to fight Mill a lot is like Leyline of Sanctity or whatever, right? And so now that, you know, Crab Friend number two can get around that, that's super good. Right.
But I think you would agree, Charlotte, that you're not primarily winning the game off of just a Ruin Crab. Like even if you have two Ruin Crabs and they've got a Sanctity.
It's in combination with other stuff. But yeah, but like every little bit helps, right? And if I'm at a point, like a lot of times, like speaking specifically like about Modern, a lot of times if we're at the point in the game where an opponent has like mulligan for a ley line, oftentimes, like you can be in a situation where they don't have a lot going on, but you know, you can't target them. So it comes down to if you have the Ruin Crab. Like there have literally just been times in the past when I've been playing Mill where it's been like, welp, I can't target you anymore. So you don't have much going on, but you'll draw something eventually. So I guess I scoop, right? Like,
right.
Whereas now the Ruin Crab can, you know, get through that.
And to defend Ruin Crab and even Hedron Crab before this. So my main starting point in Modern really was on the back of Hedron Crabs. I am like an old school Dredge Vine. My favorite standard deck of all time was like Dredge Vine with Hedron Crabs and that evolved into Modern at the very beginning of Modern when it started. I remember looping like to Gravestorm decks and stuff like before people knew what was going on. And a game plan for that deck, even back in the day, was, oh, I drew both Hedron Crabs turn one and turn two, and I know my opponent, I should just mill them out. I should stop targeting me. I know they don't have a removal spell to stop this, and I'll beat them with. Because if you have two, like every fetch land is so many cards at that point.
It moves fast.
If you're on the Ruin Crab train, if you're backed into the corner of Leyline of Sanctity and your outs are Ruin Crab and Mesmeric Orb, that gets you pretty far between the two of them on murdering a person.
Well, that's eight draws now as opposed to four. Right.
Like, and they either, if they got lucky and had Leyline on turn one, they discarded a card to do it, which means that they're slowed down. Or if they're playing it on turn four, which is 50-50, I guess, I don't know what's more likely. I'm not rank cards, so I'm not going
to
do that.
Down to like 20 cards in their library anyway.
And they wasted a turn doing nothing, right? They like paid a four drop and you're like,
I think one thing that's really interesting is that, you know, Alex, you and I have been very close friends for almost a decade now, and we've played a lot of Magic together. And when we met, it was clear that you looked at Hedron Crab one way, and I looked at it another way. You wanted that card to mill yourself. I wanted that card to mill my opponent. And I think it speaks to, you know, the concept of mill, right? Like, and Charlotte, I would love to hear what you think about this, because there's mm-hmm. a player who's attracted to the idea of milling out your opponent, right? That's it's a very particular type of Magic player. There are players
that's like, oh, I can win this way. I want to do that.
It's sort of this annoying challenge, right? It doesn't seem as easy as other things. It's kind of obnoxious, but if you can figure out the way to do it, it seems really cool and really fun. It's the same reason I play Anuan now.
It's not like an all-win card. It's built into the game, right? Like it's built in. It's a way built into the game that I can win, so I want to try and do that.
Wizards has always supported it enough. They've always supported
enough. Never a lot, but enough. I think original Zendikar was probably the peak, at least as standard goes.
Yes, Crab. I mean, I think
Crab and Trap.
Yeah, Trap. I mean, Trap is we'll talk about the card archive Trap here in a bit. Trap's a big card in terms of them acknowledging that, like, you can do this, because obviously, you know, the design of that card is so awesome, right? It's the idea that it's the idea that you start with 60.
Imagine if you could archive Trap yourself.
Yeah, I know. In 13, I mean, it's a big imagined.
Well, I mean, and that there's kind of a point there where I think the other time, I think you're right, Zendikar was the last time, but I think the other time is now, between the blue adventure creature that mills, there's the blue enchantment from Ravnica that whenever you cast a blue spell, mill to.
Yeah. Secret.
That I was using to put Arclight Phoenix into your graveyard, but I've definitely forced other people. You have the artifact. There's like a lot of really cool, unique mill cards. There's the Gargoyle, the 4/5. Eldraine had a lot of it. To the extent that
the
I'm pretty
blue,
sure
I mean, the new blue 2 drop that mills 8 and then you know has the that card's big really big,
and then the rest of the year it just kind of kept going forward.
Cacophony is it
I think a rogue tribe, right? They were seeding rogues being about this like eight card threshold idea that I think has been really cool, and that's kind of why it's been kind of brought up back to the forefront. And I think it's one of the reasons they keyworded it finally. They got to the point where, like, you know what? We have a year where mill is going to be a mechanic that we are using heavily. And there are enough cards where all of the text that is required to keyword spell out mill versus having it keyworded are preventing us from having the cards we want to be able to make. There's too much words on a card, and by keywording it, we save space. Back to kind of the world of modern and to kind of talking about like players getting into mill as a starting point. I honestly believe that there is like less than 10% of all Magic players have not built a mill deck at the beginning. I think it's
everyone's
like,
tried at some.
I think like almost. it's like the beginning of a Magic player's experience is like, oh, you can do that, and I like got all of these cheap commons that let me mill players. I'm gonna try building this, and historically, it's been bad.
you bring it up, and I think what's so funny about that is, we always talk about the play experience of, you know, a mythic rare all the way down to a common, and what the new player's experience is when they get into Magic. And they almost always will put a blue common into a set that mills between 4 and 7 cards, right? That's a standard. Yeah. It's a standard printing into limited, because it's a nice thing. You can try to, you know, wheel 5 of those into like a limited deck. But what it's really great about doing is teaching players that this is a thing. Why, you know, why do these cards do this? Why can I do this? And I think it does totally get those wheels turning, because like when I was building mill decks back to like, you know, Raven Guildmage, the one from Scourge that like morph creature that exiles top 10. I mean, I've been building mill decks for literally ever, it feels like. You know, Vision Charm. I was playing Vision Charm, but it was the best version of a mill card you could get, because you could mill 4 for 1. That was before Tome Scour, before Glimpse.
So Raven Guildmaster.
That's the one. Yeah.
I love and it exiles rather than milling, but
I mean, like Mind Funeral right now is like a $3 card. But there was a moment where it was a $10 card, just because people love, like the same way that like if you're ever selling your bulk, separate your angels and your hydras and your dragons and your like relevant tribal creatures, because they're going to go for more than bulk no matter what, because people love them. People collect them. They're excited by them.
Yeah.
Mill cards are the same deal. All of them. Like there's a player out there that like has a Phoenix deck or a Phoenix or a different mill commander or Ono and the Ruin Sage and or Thief. Ruin Thief?
The new one is Thief. Yes.
Thieves and Thief. Sages. Are you sure it's not a Ruined Siege? So like these cards are just really popular because they're cool and they win. It's like the first alternate win condition that like comes out of the game at a starting point. And obviously the problem historically is just like it's It's operating on an access that the rest of the game is not. And most mill cards are built in a way where they don't mitigate that fact. And then therefore you can't win. Or you're spending every resource you have to do something that your opponent doesn't care about until they lose. Which is true about your life total as well. It's just like control decks don't care if they go to one life, but you also aren't like playing creatures that interact. You're not, you know, like creatures don't mill when they attack. So it offers this weird angle where you have to mitigate the fact that you're playing a bunch of cards that actually do nothing until you win.
Exactly.
Which is, it's interesting that both the quantity of good mill cards that now exist and hyper mill cards that exist in Modern, plus tech that has been learned from other decks, has allowed it to kind of get to that level.
But like going back to like cards having value, even like before it was reprinted in Iconic Masters, Glimpse the Unthinkable was like a $30 card.
Right.
Trust me, I know this. I know this because I have played the crap out of that card. You know, I think again, like for a nuts and bolts perspective from a player who's listening to this and thinking about mill and the sort of percentage of life total that it is equal to, you know, you start at 20 life, right? The idea being that if you die at, if you win when you're at one, it doesn't matter that you're at one, right? So that's irrelevant. So if you lava spike somebody and you get three of their life for one red, then you're effectively dealing with like 14% of their life total, give or take, right? Like ish. If I tome scour you, which is historically for one blue the equivalent of, you know, a lava spike, it's like, I guess, the closest thing you're getting. I'm getting you a little bit more like 10%, right? It's give or take, because you start with 53 at the point that I'm going to do that on turn one. So the rate's worse, right? The rate is worse. Also, you're not, and Lava Spike is the best comp because it can't target a creature. It only is going to target a player. Whereas Tome Scour, you do have the ability to target yourself if you want to. So there's some sort of added advantage in the design of the card. But from just a base perspective, it's a worse rate. They're always designing it as a worse rate, you know? And it's pushed on a card like Glimpse, but also Glimpse is the only card in history for two mana that mills 10. So they've done one of those, right? They've done tons and tons and tons and tons of red cards that have done four damage somewhere to a player if you want them to. Like it's been done over and over and over again. And so it's one of those things where like you've got to figure you're not interacting with the board. Most red spells are able to both interact with creatures and players. And most mill spells don't do anything other than just mill. So if you don't get them to zero cards, you don't do anything. You're interacting with a zone that has nothing to do with the rest of the game. And that's, I think, what new players have a hard time understanding, right?
Right, but like we'll get into some of the secondary strategies when it comes to mill once we start talking about it in Modern specifically. But like the whole point is, sure, when you're interacting with the library and just reducing it in size, if you're just flat reducing it in size, then no, you're not affecting anything until they're empty. But at the same time, I mean, unlike someone's life total, the library is a zone that's always constantly decreasing just through natural draw, right?
So
so the thing is, even if you don't get all the way there, if you get like, you know, if I can get you down to 10 cards and then I can like turtle up and last out until you draw out, I still can win that way, right?
By virtue of the fact that Tome Scour is mill five, if the game goes five turns, you've effectively gotten a free lava spike by the end of the game. You've drawn an extra card by the fact that
unlike my life total doesn't go down by one every turn just because I'm playing Magic, right? Like,
so, and then the other side of that coin though is that the like nuts and bolts card type of Magic now, arguably for a while, is creatures, and inherently most of them are incidentally able to kill your opponent. I mean, like that's like, that was always the strength of Birthing Pod decks or Coco decks, right? Where you're playing a bunch of like 2/2 for twos that like when you have three of them together, you win. But in the meantime, I can attack with them and do incidental damage. And so while you're trying to make sure I don't combo out, I've like done 19 damage to you. And that's kind of what Mill does, but to the deck, right? Where like I'm mitigating, I have to mitigate you murdering me. But while you're like trying not to die from that, you're drawing cards, slowly killing yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
I also think that if limited Magic wasn't such a significant piece of the gameplay experience, I don't think Mill would continue to be pushed in the way that it is. It might be pushed on legendary creatures and on like splashier spells that they want to come up with like a cool way to do it. But I don't think you'd continue to get the common Mill 7, Mill 5, for one or two mana, because the whole the point of that, right, is that with a 40 card deck where you're drawing seven and your opponent has 33 cards to start a game of limited, mill is a much more viable strategy without having to go completely all in. You can do it kind of incidentally, and I think that's what makes it so fun in limited. It's like one of the best pieces of design.
Right, like in limited, that Tome Scour becomes much more akin to a Lightning Bolt, right?
Yes, because it's a huge impact.
Milling 5 of 33 is about the same as dealing 3 out of 20, right? So,
yeah. So I think it's interesting. So one thing I want to talk about is, you know, and Charlotte, I would love to talk about your mill deck because the list looked really, really cool. But way back in the day, back when Alex and I went to our first PTQ together, which was probably like 2011 or 12, 12 probably, I would think. Modern, I think, was announced. In 2011, I want to say.
Yeah, something like that.
And when we went to our first one, you brought like a blue-white blink deck, if I recall. I think that's what you were playing.
Just control.
Yeah, control. And I was playing like Esper Mill. That was like my thing I was doing back then.
Or is this
and
extended? Are we talking overextended or are we talking modern?
This was modern.
Blue-white. Yeah. I was Wall of Omens and
Venser and Delaria West. I remember you. Yeah, I love that deck. So I was playing like Esper Mill. And so, you know, a very similar principle that I see in a lot of the mill lists that are being played now. I played 4 Archive Trap. My whole theory was that I would let my opponent fetch. I would trap on turn 0 and then surgical the like Splinter Twin or whatever like the win con was, right? And you'd rip their whole strategy apart before you even took a turn. And I was playing Esper mostly because like Path was really good. I think I wanted Supreme Verdict. You know, Ghost Quarter and Path were pretty strong because there was a lot less basics back then. So if you rip their deck apart and put it in their graveyard, then like they wouldn't have anything to search for. And, you know, Glimpses. And I think I was probably playing Mind Sculpt. I think I was probably playing 4 Mind Sculpt is my guess. Nice. Because this was before the breaking entering. Definitely, you know, Hedron Crab. I'm pretty sure they hadn't printed Crypt Incursion yet. So all that stuff.
Crypt Incursion was Dragon's Maze. So
that was the deck that I tried to play back then. And it was never fast enough. It was never good enough. And even back then, I would still run into Sneak Attack decks, not Sneak Attack, Through the Breach decks playing like, you know, Eldrazi. I would still run into that same problem where like the deck would reshuffle, which is super, super frustrating. And I felt like the redundancy just wasn't there to make this good. What I think is so cool now about Modern Mill is the redundancy is like through the roof. Like these decks are not all the same. It's like it's a totally varied style of deck. Yeah, all different colors.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can like, it's an actual like broad archetype rather than a deck now, which is great.
Yeah.
Before we get into to decks, cause I have one more additional piece of Modern Mill history and then we're going to get into deck techs. But before we get into that, big thank you to all of our patrons and thank you guys so much for supporting us and making this happen. For those who don't know, we have a patron. By being a participant, you're making this podcast a thing that exists every week. You're also one of the reasons we're able to do the commander streams we now do every week. And also, if you join the Patreon, you get access to kind of the early raw feed. So we do the audio only, but it's all the stuff we normally will cut out. So, for instance, Ben disappeared for a second, and I was just talking to Charlotte without him. We said a bunch of mean things about him, and you get to hear
Marshall,
what that was.
Leave it in. Leave it in, Marshall. You leave it in.
And
I'm
at the beginning
of the
episode, we talked about Charlotte is currently in Finland, but originally from Canada, and we talked about kind of foods that we miss when traveling or abroad that you can't get out in the world. So you get all that information in the Patreon raw feed. So definitely check that out. Also, we started posting our deck list there. So if you are wondering where a deck is, it's on Patreon and that's free. So if you just go to a Patreon, all the deck lists are there. You can find them. They just live there because it's like a localized place. And then if you happen to want to throw in some money, we always appreciate it. And then also some small announcements. We are kind of changing up the schedule. So moving forward, the Masters of Modern podcast and video are coming out on Mondays on the YouTube channel. Previously, they'd come out like Friday evenings. And partly that's why Friday evening is not the best launch moment for content. So we're moving the podcast to Mondays. And because of that, the live stream for Commander is still happening Monday evenings. It's just live on Twitch and we're no longer live streaming it to YouTube. And then that video will be posted onto YouTube Wednesdays. So now there's a little bit more of a spread out content release schedule. It's no longer happening like the first thing on Friday evening as everyone's getting ready to not listen to podcasts. So that's kind of a new update to the schedule. So bear with us as that change happens, but appreciate it. And every Monday, 7:30, you can watch us play Magic. It's fun. Charlotte was on. It was cool. Yeah. And then it's on YouTube. The link will be below. Maybe if Marshall and me can figure out to remember to do that. And then as far as other announcements go, just follow us, subscribe, like and subscribe, comment. We'd love to hear. Did you build a mill deck as a new Magic player? And what mill cards were like the featured mill cards of that deck as you joined Magic? We'd love to hear what your mill, your Magic baby mill story is. We want to know. So please comment that below. Back into the subject matter of the episode. Mill, modern history. Last little piece of this will be a short one because we have full episodes about this. Go check those out. But kind of the evolution from those early days, people trying to make Mill happen, then moved into the Lantern Control era. And that kind of was, for a very long time, the premier Mill deck of Modern. And a lot of the technology in the new Mill decks are kind of taken from those with Ensnaring Bridge and just like the ability to kind of turtle up while you're milling people. And those were like hard control decks that milled like one card at a time, allowing people to draw the cards you were fine with them drawing using Lantern of Control, versus now, where now because we have two crabs and some of the other really powerful mill cards that have been printed recently, you're able to just more turbo mill them out, like kind of a classic burn deck, versus before, which was much more like of a not a tempo mill deck, but a control mill deck. And so I think,
Alex, like one distinction that I feel like any mill player needs us to make here, because like I've always felt this way. Anytime you have like the all in strategy that you're trying to do, that's like maybe a little bit off the beaten path, maybe it's a weird creature type or it's a deck like mill, and you try to build it and go all in, and then you see somebody like win with a deck that is called mill, and you look at it and it's like this Ensnaring Bridge artifact deck that's like not really winning because they're aggressively using the mechanic mill. They're winning because like that's their inevitability win condition. It always feels like a letdown because you see it's called something. It'll always be called that thing. It's called mill or whatever. Yeah. And you're always like, come on, like
you're not milling them out.
But you know, you are, but you're not.
Like the Lantern Control decks, like that was their win condition, right? They weren't being like, I don't even think they were doing like a Bobble Bolt You game plan with Academy of Ruins. Like their game plan, unless you had like an Eldrazi, was to just eat your library five cards a turn, right? Because they eventually would have five different mill cards. Yeah, they'd have
like Pyxises and Codex Shredders and...
It's shredding your deck versus milling your deck, I guess, is your point. But I think that is... I agree, though, that like there have been control decks in Modern that's game plan was to mill you out, but it wasn't actually... Their game plan was to make it so you never casted a spell again, and then eventually the game has to end because you run out of cards.
Right. I mean, it's basically the same as having a control deck whose win condition is like God Pharaoh's statue or something, right? Just like that one damage a turn ping is going to kill you eventually, right?
It's kind of like the equivalent of like a mono blue tempo deck playing Grand Architect and a few cards that like take advantage of his, you know, ability to cast things, but it's mostly just like Architect is just a lord and they'll like call it like Grand Architect tempo. And it's like, yeah, but without Grand Architect, this deck still works. And it's in my mind, I'm like, I want a Grand Architect deck. I want like to build the deck around Grand Architect. I want that card to be the card in the deck. And it's that thing.
Ben, do I have good news for you? Because our guest, Charlotte, has the deck for you. And with 12 easy payments of 10 cards at a time, you too could mill your opponent out.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to talk about your deck, Charlotte. I looked at the list and it's really cool. It's just super, super awesome. So
one of the things for people for watching, and the list is below, so you can find the list. The big difference to call out between what Charlotte's doing and the other mill decks that if you go on, you know, MTG Goldfish in the metagame is you've added this like really underpowered color that hasn't done anything powerful in a long time, green. to kind of broaden your ability to answer threats and have more powerful green cards. It ends up that green has a lot of really good removal spells, which is a weird world that we live in.
So the main reason that I run a Sultai mill deck rather than a Dimir mill deck is, again, this was more relevant in the world before Ruin Crab, but like your deck really, a Dimir deck, other than short of counter spells and stuff, just can't really answer enchantments or artifacts, certainly can't do anything to resolved ones other than bounce them. right? And so in back in those days, if you were just running Dimir, you'd have to run stuff like, God, what was that stupid dredge, put a permanent on top thing, Set Adrift?
That sounds right. Yeah, I think that's the card you're talking about. But yeah, a very roundabout way of dealing with it.
So you'd have to like run that in your sideboard to answer like ley lines and stuff, which is just awful. Like just miserable. Like that's not the magic I want to play when I'm playing mill, right? And then when for the same reasons that Ben was saying earlier that you would play in that early Esper deck, just to sort of get the procs for your archive traps. The main reason to play green is Assassin's Trophy, honestly. Like
I saw that. That's a really, really cool piece of tech.
I got super hyped when I saw it spoiled. I like pre-ordered a playset at way too much money and, you know. So the main deck runs three and the fourth in the sideboard. Green also does give us some better sideboarding options. So currently I only run one other one, which is Nature's Claim in the board, but it certainly lets us have more options for stuff. Assassin's Trophy just lets you answer any permanent. It can be creature removal, land removal, artifact removal, enchantment removal, planeswalker removal, whatever you need, right? Like, and you know, if your opponent searches, then they have to risk you having an archive trap. And if they don't search, then great. I've just had a 2-mana instant speed Vindicate, right? Like,
yeah, the fact that it turns on archive trap, and also as like Ben kind of described earlier with Path, like the ability to eventually you just mill out all their basic lands. Eventually you get to the point where like this is now just a straight up murder for any permanent.
Late game, you hit something, and if they go and find the land, that's one less card in their deck, right? So,
one of the cards that I think I would love to just sort of address for the audience is Archive Trap, and I think the design of the card is so cool because I think the idea is that, you know, ideally in any game of Magic, 90% of the time you want to be on the play. So, you know, you play your land, you pass to your opponent, they play their fetch land. Now they've drawn their cards, they have 52 cards in their deck left exactly. They crack. You play your Archive Trap for free, right?
Yeah.
And you mill 13 of the remaining 52, which is exactly 25% of their remaining deck.
Yeah.
And I think the design of that card is so pleasing.
So the dream is to have the four in the opening hand and you know, you crack your fetch? Sure. Four traps, you lose. GG.
It's one of those like pieces of like sort of parallel design when they think about the way that it matches up with the rest of the traps or like just the percentage of it that I've always found so pleasing and so cool. It's like always been one of my favorite cards, which is why so early on I really wanted to build a deck around Archive Trap. I think that's one of the beautiful designs when it comes to a mechanic. Like I think Archive Trap and you know, people play Ravenous Trap as well in these decks, but Archive Trap is far and away the coolest of the traps. I think it's definitely
Ravenous Trap is an answer more than a win con though, right? Yeah. It's a control piece. Archive Trap is great. But the one thing is, the thing is, it's four cards in your deck, right? And unless you're running like Trap Maker, Snare, or whatever to search them out, there's going to be lots of games where you just don't draw any, right? And that happens. So you need to have other ways to win. But previously, like before Ruin Crab and before like Assassin's Trophy and stuff, a lot of the games, it would be like, did I draw one or two archive traps, then I probably won. Did I not? Then I probably lost, right? It's the deck was very swingy in that way.
The rate is absurd. 0 mana for 13 cards incidentally, versus 2 for 10. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And we've talked on the podcast a lot about previously about how like redundancy printings is something to always pay attention to whenever a unique effect that like, because like a modern deck and often standard decks that like need an effect are likely not going to be good enough if they only have 4 copies of that effect available to them. Or they have to be focused in very much finding those cards or have tutors or whatever. And so like when the fact that Hedge and Crab has now been joined by Ruin Crab is one of those redundancies, right? We now have 2 of the exact same card that you can play 8 of. You're playing 8 Crab. And so given
there are subtle differences, but they're basically the same.
Right. Your initial strategy in a best of one world where you don't go up against a ley line.
Also, the Ruin Crab has an extra point of toughness, which is surprisingly relevant. So
fair. And it can actually block
well, as opposed to Hedron Crab, which basically you almost never want to block with unless you're just consigning it to the bin, right? Like,
right. It's there for chomping, where Ruin Crab will block every X2 or 2X ever created. That doesn't have Death Touch. And kind of put, like, there's a reason that, like, back in the day, Collected Company, when Battle for Zendikar was printed, there was the, like, Blood Artist, the 8 Blood Artist decks that were running around that, like, if they resolved two Collected Companies, they just won, because there's now enough Blood Artists in play that any interaction domes you for 12. Mm-hmm. yeah, so it's, like, basically. Always when these, like, redundant effects get printed, it's really important. The other card, I do want to get into some of the cool unique stuff in your deck that we haven't talked about, that I think has been really, really important for mill decks in general, and is the most played planeswalker in Modern, and that's Ashiok Dreamrun.
Ashiok was a beautiful addition to the deck and just makes it amazing, because it's more like, I mean, obviously shutting off searching is kind of anti-synergistic with Archive Trap, but I'd still rather not have that happen anyway. But having just a main deck graveyard hate piece and a piece that can immediately exile the stuff that it mills is super good. That's super relevant against stuff like Dredge, where against Dredge, I can activate my Ashiok, and I don't care if I mill a Narcomoeba or a Creeping Chill or anything, those just are gone before they can do anything.
Does the Creeping Chill not trigger? Because it's not a cast, right? Or does it
triggers, but part of the trigger is you have to exile it from the graveyard, and then if you
it has that
if you do clause, right? So
that's interesting. Yeah, I think also just like from a pure rate perspective, I mean, this is one of the things I think that planeswalkers do so well. Like, that card comes down with 5 loyalty and mills 4 turns. So if it's not messed with for 3 mana.
Yeah, uninterrupted, it's representing 20 cards, right?
Uninterrupted, it's representing a 20-card mill, which, again, considering you can only activate it once per turn, you know they're going to be drawing a card every single turn. So that means there's an additional 4 draws after you play it until it's ultimate. Yeah. So that's, by the time this card is gone, if it's not messed with, you're going to be milling 24 of their 53 they start the game with. Which is like pretty significant if you can keep this thing in play, you know?
What more usually is going to happen is Ashiok is going to come down, mill 4, exile their graveyard, and then gain you like 5 life by eating an attack or 2, right?
Right.
Well, and prevent them from fetching that turn or 2 turns, like if you're able to protect it. Like obviously the reason it's good in Modern outside of mill decks is the ability for it to just like stop fetch lands from happening. And so you mentioned Archive Trap and opponents not like it kind of not working well with Archive Trap, but that's another good reason to be playing the Assassin's Trophy, because they can still search off of an Assassin's Trophy with Ashiok in play, because it doesn't stop your effects from having them search.
Yeah, that's true.
So
my effect can still cause them to search, and then I can still trap them.
Right, which I think is cool, and like we'll just get them.
Exactly. Ashiok is just a beautiful piece of tech, and like honestly, I'm wondering if like 2 feels like the right number, but I mean, I could certainly justify running 3 main deck, possibly.
And that feels Ashiok like a curve call, where I haven't, without having played the deck a lot, I couldn't tell you where curves thing. Ben, you have one more thing before?
I feel like Ashiok fits that. I mean, like, because it's an uncommon, which makes me feel like the design of the card was to be like really cool, but not like splashy. It feels like it and Narset Pardervale's are in the same territory for me when I think about them in terms of how good, just how good they are, and how like they're sort of always good in the decks you play them in. And if you draw them, you're kind of just happy to have 4 of them. But there's also the situation where you draw too many and you're like, yeah, I mean, I think probably actually 2 to 3 is the correct number. They feel very similar to me in that regard.
I feel like Ashiok is more of a complete package, though. Like Narset, you want 99% of the time just for its static ability, right? Like, sure, you get, you know, an Ashkanta activation off of it or 2, but like, you know, I honestly think that that's not nearly as impactful as, you know, Ashiok doing Ashiok's thing, right? Like,
I'm gonna attempt to make a sports metaphor, which has often gotten me in trouble. But I've been watching a lot of haiku, so I think I understand. So like to me, Ashiok feels much more kind of like a small forward in basketball, where like generically good at a lot of different things, a really important piece to what your deck is doing, but can be both a 3-point shooter and under the net, kind of being a little bit aggressive and getting rebounds, while Narset feels much more like a center and or a point guard, where like your job is to hit your job as a center is specialized, right? You're supposed to be bigger than everyone else. You're doing a task. You're comboing with other specific cards, and you're going to be good in doing. You're going to be generically good. Like you're going to cantrip. You're going to be able to get rebounds. No problem. You're going to be able to do the other things, but you're there for a task. And that is to, you know, stop people from drawing cards and wheeling people out of the game, where like Ashiok could self mill, which is kind of drawing you cards depending on what deck you're playing. 99% of decks playing.
I think your opponent has a win condition.
Ashiok can prevent your opponent from tutoring. Ashiok can exile your opponent's graveyard. Like it does everything a little bit in a much more like full court press. Mm-hmm. Did I sports metaphor correctly then?
It was a reasonable metaphor. Yes. It wasn't bad. Wasn't bad at all. I mean, you talk about like the examples of these cards, and like Narset's ability feels like, in some formats, it feels so good and like so outrageously good. So our last commander game that we played, I was playing Joyra, and I had this one insane turn where I took like 19 turns with extra turns cards, and I like used all my mana, and then it was like, oh, I have 3 mana left exactly, and I have this one card in hand. It's Time Twister. Oh, and I also have this Narset with exactly one toughness, with one loyalty on the battlefield. Sorry, guys. None of you draw anything. And it was like...
We scooped.
or you draw one card.
You guys all draw one, and it was like, yeah, like, that ability in conjunction with some things is so bonkers. It's like, so stupid good. Because you mentioned, like, the Azkanta activation. I think that if that card was an enchantment that was like, your opponents can't search, or your opponents can't draw more one card per turn. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top two and any non-creature cards you can choose one to put into your hand. That's it. If it got like half the depth and only one activation, wasn't a planeswalker, but had that ability, I still think it would get played. Because
it would actually be better because then it can't be attacked down.
Yeah. Like, that card's insane. Let's say it's a creature.
I think even just with the static ability, it would be fine.
Yeah,
maybe with a Scry 1 ETB or something.
I think a 3-mana 0/1 that just all they did was players can't draw cards more than one card a turn. That card would be a multi-format staple.
yeah. So I definitely think that the design of it was great. But yeah, but back to Ashiok.
Great.
Definitely Ashiok is an insanely cool card, and I think when it was printed, most of us looked at it initially as a sideboard card, and I think that in most decks it is. It's just that it's just so happens the design of it, because of the mill aspect, is, I mean, because imagine for a second that Ashiok didn't have the mill, right? Imagine Ashiok was just exile and had the static ability. I think the card would still be the same sideboard card that it is. It would still be exactly the same in most regards.
Like it's the -1 would say draw a card, each opponent exiles their graveyard, like that would still be super fine for my deck. I think this might not be a main deck card. It would probably be a sideboard card.
I think if all Ashiok did was the static ability, which is a planeswalker that came in with that static ability, no other abilities, I think it would see as much. I think it would still see significant play. It just wouldn't see any play in a fun way. No one would use it. I probably wouldn't
be running it in this deck, but yeah.
Right. Like it wouldn't be a card. It would be like Aven Mind Censor. It wouldn't be a card people would play.
Like honestly, for me, the Ashiok static ability is like the least important part of the card for this deck for Mill. But yeah, it's still excellent gravy.
I just built a Mamioplasm Commander deck. It's in there. I have a Highlander. I have multiple self-mill Highlander decks, because that's what I live for, and Ashiok's in every single one of them, because being able to mill me 5 cards and then exile other people's libraries. I have it in 2 different Kess decks, because I can exile my opponent's graveyards, which is great in Commander, and then I can mill 5 cards into my yard, and some of them will be spells, and Kess can recast them. So I think, Ashiok is just in general really strong. I wanted to start touch upon a few before we... I want to touch upon a few of the spicy includes. The first one is Cling to Dust, which my personal favorite card from Theros Beyond Death, purely off of the fact that Michael, at the beginning of us doing deck building during the pre-release, talked a lot of crap about how bad that card was. It's like, no, it draws a card. I'll keep it. And then I proceeded in the finals of that pre-release against Michael. I then proceeded in the finals of that event to single-handedly with Cling to Dust to destroy Michael. That was the only card that mattered in the game. Just drawing cards and exiling different cards from his graveyard that had escape was so good. I love Cling to Dust. And it's an instant, and it draws you a card, and it exiles things, and it gains you life. It does everything.
Or it gains you life, which is important in some matchups, too.
So, well, let me ask you this, because the card Cling to Dust, in Historic, I have historically played, no pun intended, two copies of it in the deck, and obviously, like, with like Fairy Vandal, it's good, you're milling them out, so like there's a lot of opportunity, but I find against the burn decks the gain three of it is not good enough unless I can get it more than once. It's like just kind of low impact, and it only really ever makes me happy when I cycle it, which, like, there's plenty of cards that can cycle now. If it has the very specific utility of like, let me get rid of this Uro, or like, you know, this but if you're milling them out and they have good things in their graveyard, often you're going to incidentally hit more than one of those things anyway. So it's like, because it only hits one card, I'm always a little underwhelmed by it. Have you found it in this deck to be an all-star okay?
Again, it's, you know, I'm still testing it out. Like, I was away from Modern for, at least away from this deck for a while, like since even before War of the Spark. So when I came back to integrate the Ruin Crabs and everything, I looked at, like, I'd gotten excited because I'd heard that some of, like, the early Magic Online leagues had been, like, there were multiple 5-0 mill decks and stuff. And so I looked at a bunch of those lists, and I saw this in one of them, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I started thinking about it, and it's like it's fighting for space with, like, main deck Surgical Extractions, right? But I like it as a one of, because there are matchups where exiling the specific card in the graveyard is more relevant than exiling all of them. And I've been impressed with it so far, mostly because it cycles, unlike a lot of other modern mill decks, mostly because I'm playing Sultai and playing the Assassin's Trophies. I don't have room for Visions of Beyond and stuff. And so that's the typical sort of cantrip that's played in these decks. And so this takes the spot of something like that as well, and plays double duty with the cantripping effect. And, you know, just like a lot of times, if it's like, if I don't have anything better to do and I know the matchup doesn't like need me to be on guard to exile something specific, I can just cycle it, you know, exile a fetch, their fetch land on turn one, draw a card and play on. Right. And I like that flexibility on it. Again, I haven't playtested it enough, but like even against something like Dredge, like again, I've only taken this build of the deck out for a small local modern event on Monday night, and in that event, I played against two Dredge decks. But even against those Dredge decks, it served me well, just because like, just being able to like pick off, I mean, would I have preferred it to be a Surgical in those cases? Sure. But still being able to pick off the one Dredge card in their graveyard was still very helpful. Like, I think
I think that the thing you mentioned, that I think many Magic players that like to play efficient and like tight deck lists will relate to, is that when you have that, like, let's just say it's a two lander and you've got like a Glimpse in your hand, and you're like, okay, but if I stall out and I don't draw lands here, this is going to be kind of a rough game. I can just kind of tell. And that Cling is in the opener. That's the one where you're like, okay, like it, even if nothing else, this is going to cycle me into a land, hopefully. And that's why this card's worth it. Because even if I don't have a game plan, because I don't know what they're playing yet, this makes me feel better about this two lander. And that's what I found about that card, which is I feel better about it.
I mean, it's a good little flex card, and it's also in the matchups where it's not super relevant, it's an easy cut for sideboarding, right? Like it's sort of just, it's a very airy card in the deck, to use a metaphor. It basically, it does its job, but it's never super important. But sometimes it'll just be a good role player as well.
Yeah.
I think also like it is a card draw engine, right? Like this is a card that if you get towards the late game and you're stalled out for whatever reason, or they've been able to answer things, like A, with all your fetch lands, you could, like, worst case scenario, if you're, like, at the a weird moment and just need to draw a card, and, like, you can, like, hedge and crab yourself once to, like, get the card needed to escape, and, like, being able to do that repeatedly. And in many ways, it acts like Graveyard Ancient Grudge, right? Like, it's not as robust as other things, but Ancient Grudge that draws you a card against a dredge deck or against a graveyard deck or even against, like, decks that, what's the land that I'm now blanking on? The blue one? That Snapcaster Mages, Snapcaster land?
Mystic.
Yeah, Mystic Sanctuary. So yeah, even against Mystic Sanctuary decks, like in Modern, it's way more relevant to be able to target specific cards a lot of the times than in other formats. Should I got a Snapcaster Mage? That this has a much more targeted thing. Like, obviously, Surgical Extraction does that, but Surgical Extraction isn't a card draw engine. Doesn't have the reverse option of being a life gain hate card against aggro decks,
and often is a life loss 90% of the time.
It gets to function 30 or 40% of the time in the same way that Veil of Summer does, which is like I'm going to do this thing and also get a card out of it for one mana, and so like that's good enough.
So going back to I hadn't played the deck since like before War of the Spark. Like this is my first build of it with Ashiok in it and everything, but I had been playing Cling to Dust in just my mono black commander deck. And I had been having really good success with it in there. And so I knew sort of the play patterns I could do with it. And I figured, this is something I want to try in this deck. It's a card that's like gives you that little bit of value for late game as well.
Well, so let me ask you about Fraying Sanity, because this is the other two of in the deck that I see that I'm like, because we mentioned a lot of the cards earlier in the show that are sort of those optional cards people include. Yeah. And Fraying Sanity is definitely one of them. Obviously, we mentioned that I'm playing the Anowon Ruin Thief deck and Commander, and I had a great game where I had Fraying Sanity on turn two with like fast mana that was epic, and it's very good. I think the curve, right, is that you get to play it on turn three, and then if you have four mana and potentially like two glimpses, it's just pretty much game over, right? There are crazy plays with that card.
Oh yeah, exactly. Or even into a hard cast trap or something, right? Like, that's the one thing people forget. Like, so you can just hard cast Archive Trap for five, and that's good enough a lot of the time late game. But yeah, like, Fraying Sanity is just basically turbo mode, and you just need it in some cases. Like, it's honestly often a card that is sided out for the tougher matchups, but, like, for the matchups where you just need to be faster, it is just super good and just gets you ahead. Also, it takes advantage of, there's so many just incidental, and the fact that it triggers not just on milling, but on cards going to the graveyard from anywhere, right? Just incidentally, like Fraying Sanity will get you, two cards on your opponent's turn. And then, I mill them, plus I kill their creature. Oh, there's another 11 cards on my turn sort of thing, right? Like, it's good incidental hit, and it's just super, super useful. And for example, in one of the matches I played on Monday, I was playing against Green Tron. And in the last game of that match, like, I didn't necessarily need it there, but it was like, okay, I had two crabs out. I played a fetch land. I cracked the fetch land, milled them 12. And it's like, how many cards in your library? They're like 12. Oh, okay. Then I'll just play the Fraying Sanity and pass the turn. Like,
I think Fraying Sanity is a little bit more obscure. It's two blue, enchantment or a curse. Enchant player at the beginning of each end step. Enchanted player puts the top X cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard, where X is the number of cards put in the graveyard from anywhere this turn. So it's doubling season for mill.
Yeah. Well, what's cool about that is that there's a creature version that was printed in Jumpstart called, I think, Bruvac the Grand Eloquent.
That's just any mill, but Yeah, Bruvac is sweet, but it's only specifically mill as opposed to anything hitting the graveyard.
Well, what I was going to say is that so Bruvac is not playable in Modern, right? He's Jumpstart. And sadly,
If he was playable in Modern, oh boy.
My question is, would you play Bruvac or would you play Fraying Sanity? Because they can kill Bruvac, and Fraying Sanity triggers end of turn, whereas Bruvac, like, you play it on turn three, they can probably just kill it before you untap. I feel like you'd still play Fraying Sanity.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd probably play at least one Bruvac. I think it would depend on the build I was going for, and I'd have to test it out. But yeah, I mean, I think I like Fraying Sanity better. It's a little more sturdy. And again, it gets all that incidental cards hitting the yard stuff, right? Yeah. Like,
I think Bruvac being Bruvac also being a 1/4 for three is like a super is willing to do a split.
Then he'd actually be pretty decent as like a blocker. So, big, and he doesn't die to bolt, right? So
he's thick. He needs to.
Yeah, he is a thick boy.
He's a thick boy.
I'm honestly glad that I don't need like 3 to 4 of, you know, a $60 card for the
$65.
He's expensive. Just that. Well, because Jumpstart doesn't exist.
Like 25 euros.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. No one owns a Jumpstart pack in the world.
The last one of that seems super spicy is the copy of Mission Briefing that I see in here.
Mission Briefing is great. I'm actually kind of sad I can't run more than one Mission Briefing. But with the new crabs, that was one of the things that had to get trimmed back. Mission briefing. Yeah. So like that was in the last. Yeah. So I last had this deck built after Mission Briefing came out, but before War of the Spark. So somewhere in that Ravnica block. Mission Briefing is great in that it does what Snapcaster can't for Archive Trap, in that it lets you play it again from your graveyard for zero.
I didn't realize
that. You're just casting it. You're not casting it without paying its mana cost, or you're not forced to pay a flashback cost, right? So Mission Briefing specifically lets you Archive Trap for zero from your graveyard.
That's epic. I did not know that.
So cool. So basically if you have two blue open and your opponent fetches, you can be okay. End of turn, trap you. Mission Briefing, trap you, right?
That's like really cool too, because I think I did play the version with Trap Finder Snare or Trap Maker Snare, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
I don't think I played four in the end. I think I played like two, but the whole idea just being like, you needed to make sure you could always archive trap. And like, this just seems almost strictly better. Like almost.
Yeah. Cause also you can just dig for anything. And it's also just a decent, again, it's another sort of flexy card draw sort of thing in that, you know, if it's just late game and I top deck this, sure, I can just play Mission Briefing if I maybe don't have a trap in my graveyard or something.
You have Glimpse or...
Yeah, I can hit a Glimpse spell. Or, you know, even if I just hit, you know, Cling to Dust or an Assassin's Trophy or something, it's just a good dig to find something to help. But yeah, it's a sweet card, and like even just Mission Briefing into a Fatal Push can be fine a lot of the time, right?
Let me ask
you. But like specifically the interaction with trap is what keeps it in the deck, just because that is just beautiful.
Snapcaster Mage has been powerful for all the obvious reasons for all of Modern, and this is that, but can hit Archive Trap. It's basically the argument. You can't block, but you can hit that. One of the lists that I found while looking up the different mill decks that we were looking for was this four color self-mill deck, and it's called Mill. And this actually, Ben, to your point earlier in the podcast, repeat, like, this isn't Mill, it's called Mill, but you're not milling. And it's just like called 4C Mill on MTG Goldfish just because it has Hedron Crab in it. But you're milling yourself. This is playing Ashen Riders and Jinkataxius and Woodfall Primus and
that's self-mill reanimator, right? Like.
But it is playing, and on our hot take that came out on Friday, that you all listening to this podcast now we're in a weird time loop, should go listen to. we were just talking about how cool modal double face cards are, and it's playing Glasspool Mimic of all cards. It's like, wait, really? What is this card? I thought it was, because at first it was Artist, like Hedging Crab, Stitcher Supplier. Wait, does that mill yourself and the other opponent? Maybe. I'm not going to really think about it. Glasspool Mimic. And I was like, wait, this isn't real. And it's dope. I'm like, I really love the double face cards. I think they're really
cool. That card, that Glasspool Mimic, I mean, I've seen it in the modern list you're talking about, because I checked it out, but it's played in the Seagate Stormcaller Neoform deck in Historic, where they go, they get a ton of dual caster mages. They all come in as 3/3s, and you get 8 of them, and then you get like, you know, the Rubble Belt, whatever, and they all get haste, and also sometimes they get Combat Celebrant, so they can attack for double time as their final creature. But I mean, that card is like, that deck alone proves to me that like, that's a sweet idea, because like, you're literally getting the option to search out a clone for a land, right? Any deck that's going to go and do some kind of infinite thing like that, and there's lots of them in different formats, you now have a tapped blue land that can come in as a clone. Like,
oh yeah,
pretty good. That's pretty unique.
And, well, actually, speaking of like the double faced cards, this isn't mill related, but like I just before I came on with you guys, I was playing Commander on stream with CNC Power Hour, and I was playing my Bant Mutate deck. And I did something pretty cool. I was kind of screwed for lands, but I had Survival of the Fittest out. So I cycled, basically I discarded a creature and found Kazandu Mammoth and then played it as the land. So it's like, yeah, I can Survival of the Fittest for a land now. So that's pretty cool.
That's sweet, actually. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, there's I do want to touch upon a few of the cards that we didn't mention, and then get into a few cards that like maybe that are on the other list that we found online. The two, and I'll go through these quickly because I think they're more established kind of cards, and we don't want to run out of time. The first one, which we've mentioned a bunch, of Surgical Extraction. This is like just one of the best mill interactive cards. You can eat things out of the graveyard, then get them to discard cards or get rid of combo pieces you don't want to deal with. You can also, I believe you can hit Eldrazi with it to prevent them from milling out. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Eldrazi trigger.
So
you can't hit stuff like, what's it? Stupid instant speed extra turn spell that shuffles itself back in.
Oh, Nexus.
Yes.
You can't hit that because that's a replacement effect. But you can hit.
If this hits the graveyard, do X instead of if this would hit the graveyard instead.
I mean, they'll still reshuffle what's left of their graveyard with the Eldrazi, but you know, you'll still, at least there won't be any left in the deck after that, right?
Yep. Glimpse the Unthinkable, which we've also touched upon. It's just the best rate for mana mill card ever.
Most efficient, single target, single use mill spell. I mean, two mana mill 10, they haven't done better. Yep. So
we have Mesmeric Orb, which is two mana. Whenever a permanent becomes untapped, that permanent's controller puts the top card of his or her library into his or her graveyard. Just anytime every spell they cast, for how much mana they cast, they mill. Every creature they attack, they mill.
It's an artifact, and that card is, because it costs two, I think it's the reason that card's so good. I feel like if that card costs three, it would be
much more niche,
30-40% worse, just because by the time in a deck, like especially in a mill deck, if by the time you get to three mana, you are so much more focused on like either staying alive or being aggressive. But two is exactly where you can be to cast something like that card.
One fun thing is Mesmeric Orb is just a surprisingly defensive card against token decks. There have been times where I've played this deck in the past where I was against a token deck, and my opponent, I had like no bridge, no defenses, but my opponent literally could not attack me in fast enough without milling themselves out because of the Mez Orb.
Right, because if they attack you for 10 in the air, like if they're Lingering Soul tokens for 10, they then untap and mill themselves 10, which drew you two cards, and you still have 10 life to be able to deal. That's really funny. And then the last card is Ensnaring Bridge, which is one of my favorite cards, even though I can never say it correctly. Thank God the card is right here that I read. Three mana for an artifact, each creature... each creature with power greater than the number of cards in your hand cannot attack. This deck is just so low to the ground in converted mana cost. There's so many one drops and two drops. I think the converted mana cost average, it doesn't give me an actual average, but it's like mostly one and two or three.
2.14.
So you can get your hand empty pretty
quickly.
That's
probably without lands, so... But yeah.
Oh, got it. And so it's definitely a good way to kind of keep... yourself alive. And this is like Lantern Control was built around this card, right? That's how that deck used to just not die
One thing that's actually really fun is a lot of times in sideboarding, like the Mez Orb and the Ensnaring Bridge are the only artifacts in the deck, and a lot of times people will bring in artifact removal for one or the other depending. And so honestly, a lot of the times the correct move is to side, depending on the deck you're against, is to side out all of them and just completely blank their artifact removal at that point, right?
That makes sense. Yeah. Because you're milling them out, but if you could even just be up one of those spells, like an Ancient Grudge or something, then it's like they've basically mulliganed already.
Well, yeah. Oh, but also, again, if you're milling against Ancient Grudge, it's like, then, okay, you're drawing them a card, basically, right? Like, because you put that in their yard and now. Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's good. And, like, usually if you side out the bridge, you bring in Darkness, which is Black Fog, which is modern legal because of the time shift.
Because of time shift. Yeah,
dope.
Yeah, I love that.
So dope.
Darkness is just such a sweet card. Like, just literal Black Fog from Legends.
Yeah,
and of course, I play the Legends versions so that people have to like read microtext.
And then some in the lands, you know, fetch lands, shock mana bases, some specific ones to call out. Oboro, the Palace of the Clouds, which for one mana lets you return it to your hand. I'm assuming this is Hedge and Crab, Ruin Crab. Keep that landfall train rolling.
It's just basically keep the landfall rolling.
And then Field of Ruin, which A, keeps that landfall rolling because you get to put another land into play, plus turns on your archive traps.
Importantly, unlike almost every other thing, Field of Ruin forces the search. It's not a search. It's a forced search. So it's
really important, yeah.
So yeah, you can it basically says you can cast your archive trap for 3 mana or 2 mana instead of 5 mana, right?
That's sweet.
It's another landfall trigger for your crab, right? So
right. It's like it kind of does everything you need.
It's a beautiful thing. I'm just kind of sad that I can't fit more than 2. That's one advantage the 2-color decks do have. They can run 3 or 4 Field of Ruins in their mana base, but with 3 colors, I can't justify running like 3 or 4 colorless lands.
Yeah, and kind of the and great segue. the other kind of mill decks, the blue black ones, just a few cards that kind of call out here that we can bring up. As if you want to build this deck, listeners, and you want to try this out, these are some of the other cards that people are playing. You have Visions of Beyond, which we mentioned, which is a different cantrip than Cling to Dust. This allows you to kind of it at some point in the game may become an Ancestral Recall. So for 1 mana, draw a card if a graveyard has 20 or more cards in it, draw 3 cards instead. So it's just like super sweet if you can pull it off. I've done it twice in my life and both times were phenomenal.
It's sweet when it works, but a lot of the times it's just a dead cantrip. And
It's just like a worse Cling to Dust usually.
Well, yeah, but like the thing is, even if you like top deck it, sure, but now you're down a mana and maybe you can't cast whatever it is you draw, right? Like if you're on 3 lands... You know, you're now nerfing yourself a lot.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Plus, it is.
It's a sweet card, but I think it's definitely been eclipsed, certainly by stuff like Cling to Dust and stuff.
It also has the it's like a win more card, right? Like I now draw 3 cards.
Win more card. And I see a lot of these lists running like it is a 4 of. I could see it as like a 1 or 2 of just to fill flex slots, but like. I certainly don't think its time as a 4 of should be relaxing. But then again, I am not going 5-0 in Moto League, so who knows, right?
And
so.
I think part of it is they're trimming lands for that feature, right? They're generally playing 22 lands, and because you're playing 3 colors, I think that would be a lot harder to do.
Exactly. No, like with 3 colors, I need to run like so many fetches and so many shocks and so many basics. Like I'm running 24 lands. I'm even running Prismatic Vista, just because a lot of the times like your life total can be under a lot of pressure because you're not really blocking with this deck. So before I can establish a bridge, a lot of times my life total is under pressure, and sometimes I just want to be able to fetch a land and not have to take 3 from it. So I've been playing a couple of Prismatic Vistas and I've been very happy with them so far.
Cool. They're playing a little bit more Crypt Incursion, which I think is a count towards that life game, which is exile all creature cards from target player's graveyard. You gain 3 life for each card exiled this way as an instant. Just a almost kind of life gain option that's pretty cool. And then hates on the dredge decks.
I have them in my sideboard just because there's less pure. I think modern is less pure creature decks at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more decks that aren't creaturing you out.
Gain 4 for 3 or gain 6.
So running it main deck is it's amazing in the sideboard, but like the days of playing against 2 humans decks in a 6-round tournament guaranteed is over, right? Like
sure.
Another card that some people run instead of or in addition to Crypt Incursion is Profane Memento.
Yep.
Which is a one mana artifact. Whenever a creature card is put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, you gain a life, which is super sweet. Cool. But it's never a card that I've had a lot of success. I've tried it a couple times and I've never been super impressed, at least in my builds. I also like it. I also like I said, the strategy of being able to take out all my artifacts and blank that artifact removal. And also, it's just like Crypt Incursion. Like, it depends. One's proactive, one's reactive. But, sure. Like, if I draw Profane Memento late game, it might be too late. Whereas if I draw Crypt Incursion, you know, then I'm good, right?
Right.
I can hold, if there's nothing there yet, I can hold it and play it when it's relevant. Whereas Profane Memento, if I don't get it early, I'm kind of screwed, right?
As far as cool lands go, we do have a Shell Dock Isle. This is the blue hideaway land. You may play when it enters, you exile. You look at the top four cards, you exile one of them face down. You may play the removed card without paying its mana cost if your library has 20 or fewer cards in it, and you tap it and play blue. If a library. So it lets you kind of like draw that last card to win if you need it. It's just kind of an extra card draw spell out of your land.
It's an ETB tapped land, which is kind of not great. And it's slow, and I'm in a three-color build. I don't want to, and especially with eight playable one drops, I don't want a tapped blue land anymore.
It feels like in your deck that wouldn't be the card. It feels like the blue black version, that being that last card, you need to close it out, you know?
Again, it's because of the different requirements of my mana base as well. That card, or like Ipnu Rivulet, those are the sorts of cards that the Jumeirah version can afford to run in their mana bases, whereas I can't so much. Also, in that same sort of just utility land slot, I've had a lot more success. Right now it's in the sideboard because they had to move over for the crabs, but I've had a lot of success with Search for Iskanta in this deck, especially for the slower matchups. And one thing that's super sweet is it can actually be a ramp card. You can go, turn one Hedron Crab, turn two, fetch land, mill yourself six, play Search for Iskanta. Next turn, have seven cards in your graveyard. It flips. You've ramped.
That's so sweet.
See,
that's why Hedron Crab's the goat. You can target yourself to do wild things like that.
Hedron Crab is sweet. Like, I love Ruin Crab, but Hedron Crab is still the goat.
Sheldock. So the other list, and just bouncing off, I think my comment on Sheldock Isle is like three is a lot. This other one played one, which I think makes more sense.
In the past, before I went three colors, I ran one or two.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like getting that tapped land when you just need, say, your fifth untapped land to like hard cast a trap or something.
Right.
Can be really bad.
And then the other cool land that this deck is playing is Miko Koro. Center of the Sea, which lets you each player draws a card for two, which is just like, as we said earlier, their card draws are technically doing one damage to them a turn, plus this lets you draw cards to get cards to do more damage to them.
Coral also lets you get the instant speed win, right? If you can mill them to zero.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
You can make them draw and lose immediately and just so that they don't get another untap or would upkeep sort of thing.
Right. And then the other cool cards that the second deck, it's playing Blood Chief's Thirst in addition to Fatal Push. And I think you're playing Assassin's Trophy in that same slot, right? Just like additional removal spells.
I mean, Blood Chief's Thirst is sweet, but it's a sorcery and that kind of feels pretty bad in modern.
Agreed. Right. Yeah,
and I think this is a curtail to like, I'm playing two colors. I don't have access to better removal spells in blue black.
Assassin's Trophy is just silky smooth and perfect. Right. And like,
though on a spicy removal spell, they are playing Drown in the Lock, blue black.
Drown in the Lock is sweet. I have that in my sideboard. It's an amazing card. It's
not good main deck.
I don't have a spot for it main deck. I mean, it would be fine main deck, but like, especially with the eight crabs, I want my main deck to be a little more straightforward. Drown in the Lock is honestly like almost a sideboard card. Or it's almost like a control card in a way, because it's also a counter spell as well as a removal spell. And like, I'm happy with the pushes. And like, as in terms of removal spells, I'm happy with my three pushes, three trophies in the main. And so I don't really need that extra Drown in the Lock. Like, again, if I was blue black, I'd run some main, obviously, because I can't run trophy. Like, that's another thing. Like, honestly, if I was running just blue black my main deck, I'd probably run, you know, four pushes, two drowns or three drowns rather than Lechief's Thirst or anything like that.
I think this is all like your deck flexes based on experience and playstyle, right? Like this deck is playing only two Ensnaring Bridges. So it's playing three Crypt Incursions. So it's playing more like life gain. And I'm sorry, I was mixing it up. This deck is actually playing no bridges, and so like it needs the extra. It's using Drowned of the Lock and Bloodchief's Thirst as a more thorough control suite to just kill them that way, to keep them off of creatures so that they can get away with it. And then it's also, the last card is Maddening Cacophony, which is the new card from Rise of Zendikar, which is the two mana each opponent mills eight cards, or which is another each speaking towards. Another each speaking towards
another each.
Not having Ley Line ruin your day.
And you can take it for six to mill them half. But like, if you're getting, like, honestly, if you're getting to six lands, your crabs should be taking care of them anyway.
Yeah, this is, so I had Maddening.
By the time you're at six lands, you don't really want to kick it. You're probably milling more with the just straight two mana mill eight.
During my like first release day limited event in Rise of Zendikar, I was able to pull like the two Ruin Crab deck off, and I had this in my pool. It was sealed, so I had this and Ruin Crab, and what I found was that by the time I could cast six mana, the fact that this just milled them eight was significantly more cards than the half of their deck.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I got them down to like 14,
exactly,
and milling them for eight. I was like trying to do the math, being like, okay, if I mill them for seven and then I like do this, I might be able to win. And then I like read it, and again, I was like, oh, if I just cast this, I win this turn.
Yeah.
For two mana. So like,
I mean, that is sweet. And like, that's more of a, I think the kicked mode is more of a commander card.
Yes, yeah, that's fair.
And that, and also in that, like, if you kick it and you have Bruvac, you kind of just win. So
right. Yep. And so that is. Kind of all of the like cool, unique, these are the other kind of like 5-0 lists online. Otherwise it's like a self-mill deck that we can talk about in a future episode. So those are kind of all like the different unique stuff you can put in the decks. It's like definitely a different play. You know, there's this deck that has the Ensnaring Bridge is in the sideboard, but is leaning much more into like kind of the control removal spell. There's the second one that has that kind of like two Ensnaring Bridges and like more Ravenous Crypt Inversion traps. You're just gaining a bunch of life. Or your list that's like taking advantage of the fact that you get green and you get these much stronger sideboard cards, Assassin Trophy in the main, plus a lot of your spice, which I love. I'm here for Fraying Sanity, and Mission Briefing, and Cling to Dust. So it's really cool not only how cool these and powerful these decks have become, like in a format that like Ben has been trying to make mill happen since Mean Girls came out. And now not only has it come out, but there's like different ways you can build it. And it actually seems like a relatively versatile suite.
Yeah. But like literally just having eight crabs is super good, just because you get the double crab openings more often. You just have two crabs in play more often. On Monday, I literally had an opening hand that was, I think, it was an island, two fetches, three crabs, and a Glimpse the Unthinkable. Sadly, it was one of the games where I was playing against Dredge, so I couldn't keep it.
Oh, no. Well, so that's, I guess you mentioned at the beginning, and I did want to bring that up before we wrap up, and that is Dredge and kind of that weird relationship. Because as a Dredge player and a self-mill player, this was always like a very weird matchup, because I've actually lost more to mill as Dredge than anything else, because my damage output against them, even if they mill me, is going to be slower, because every card I play is doing damage to me for them. And it always feels close. I always feel like I get them down to like four, and then they just like, and then I draw the last card of my deck and I lose. But it's this really, really fascinating relationship between your killing yourself and their drawing you cards.
Yeah, it's a very, very different, interesting. The matchup was a lot more lopsided to mill before Creeping Chill was printed, but now with Creeping Chill, Dredge has basically like a free 12 damage against the mill deck, unless mill can hit it with an extraction.
Fair. That's super valid. The just the reach that Dredge now has with Creeping Chill available, plus the Prize of Malgrove game plan and everything else it was doing, definitely probably moves the matchup a little bit in its favor.
Definitely. Like literally, one of the games on Monday, again, I was playing against Dredge, and I had gotten them down to 23 cards left in their library, and they'd only hit one Creeping Chill. And I was wondering, okay, maybe they sided one or two out, you know, because they know I have the extractions and stuff. Sure. And so it was like, well, I had the opportunity to have, I had a crab and I had two glimpses in hand. And so it was like, yeah, sure. I mean, and so I hit them, but no, and I was at like eight, but they still had the three remaining chills in the deck. And it's like, well, I lost, but, you know, what am I going to do? Not go for it? Right,
right. So,
they were facing me down with like a board of, you know, zombies and stuff anyway. So it's an interesting push and pull. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You definitely see Dredge decks draw a lot more cards from their library against Mill than against any other deck.
Yeah, why not? You get to draw cards now because you're doing all the work for you. Sweet. So that is all the time we have for today, where I think we're like in an hour and a half. So awesome conversation. And before we go to our things, big thank you, Charlotte, for coming on and talking all things Mill with us. It was a blast.
Thank you so much.
Mentioned at the beginning of the show, everyone, you can find Charlotte on Twitter at JQuil or Jackal Girl. Jackal Girl. Am I doing this right? Okay. Jackal Girl, JQL Girl on Twitter. And you can find us. I am at Cass Wiley on Twitter.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media, and also Ben Bateman Streaming on Twitch is the place that you can follow me. I made Mythic with this Rogues deck, and I'm going to be switching it up, honestly, maybe to a Mill deck. It seems I wonder if you can build Mill in Historic in a cool way. It sounds really fun.
You have what's his face, the thick boy, the 1/4 guy that we talked about.
Yeah, you can play Bruvac. Yeah, exactly. It sounds really.
You also have the Bruvac Cacophony combo, right?
So that's sweet. And just new schedule, just a reminder, every Monday we do live stream 7:30 PM. That's tonight. You're listening to this episode. If you're listening to the day on release, go to twitch.tv/CassWiley. That is my Twitch channel. We are live streaming Commander tonight. I don't know who the guest is yet, but they'll be dope. I might be playing the new Mimeoplasm deck that I built literally in 3 hours yesterday. And make sure to also check out last week's episode. We had Ashlyn Rose and Andrew Baird on. They're both amazing as well. Ben crushes dreams, but then we play this cool like aggro version where we had a sudden death clock on that was really fun. So definitely check last week's episode out. Make sure to, and then last but not least, check out the Patreon. There's full episodes. You get actually almost a week early. It comes out on Wednesday on Patreon. The episode will come out for everyone else on Monday now. So definitely check that out. Please help us make this podcast grow and happen.
Please.
Beyond that, once again, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on. And there'll be links below the episode to all the important things, including the episode Charlotte came on to do to the our Commander stream a few weeks ago. So all the good things. Thanks everybody. We'll talk to you guys next week or tonight on
thank
the stream
you
if you show up.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.